Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
The world's greatest jazz, soul and blues from the world's greatest artists. This is Jazz FM. Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss in partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with a musician shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guests today are inventor and author William Conquumba and serial entrepreneur Tom Riley, co-founders of the Moving Windmills Project, an NGO empowering young changemakers in rural Malawi. Having been forced to drop out of school during a famine, 14-year-old William's fascination with a photo of a windmill in a library book and how it could pump water drove him to try and solve his family's problems by building his own windmill using cast-off materials from the junkyard. Despite everyone telling him he'd fail, the profound success of William's windmill brought him to the attention of Tom Riley, creator of the International TED Fellows Program, which supports young innovators to expand the reach and impact of their ideas. William went on to graduate from the African Leadership Academy, then Dartmouth College in the US, and with Tom's support, William's memoir, The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, was followed by a 2019 film of the same name, directed by and starring Chiwetel Ejiofor as William's dad. And now the Royal Shakespeare Company, no less, have adapted William's story into a musical theatre show arriving in London this month. And meanwhile, William and Tom are developing their Moving Windmills Innovation Centre, a space dedicated to tools, mentorship and international experimentation where young people can create scalable, self-reliant solutions for their communities. It's lovely to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Easy to just, as people do in the world of business and brands, just saying, here's the story. The story is William's life. It is your life. And things happened. Can we just go back for those people that don't know and just tell me in 2001, I think it was 2001, what was going on in Malawi? And you were like a 14-year-old, I believe.
So in 2001 in Malawi, we experienced a drought. That drought that led into a famine, the biggest famine in the country's history for many years. It was very devastating famine. It was very hard. A lot of people were starving. A lot of people died due to famine. So that time, even my family was badly affected by the situation.
And what did you do about it? The young boy, I think of when I was 14 and I have got some children, they've all been 14, they're kids and they were enjoying school and they were playing and they weren't thinking about stuff that was going to happen that was tough because their childhoods were not tough. What was going on for you?
So during that time when the famine was happening, it was also the same time that I was supposed to start secondary school. In Malawi, secondary school, you have to pay for school fees. Because of the situation, my parents couldn't afford to pay for my education. I was forced to drop out of school. When I had to drop out of school, I looked at my father and looking those dry field. That wasn't the future that I could have expected. I didn't want to become like my father. I didn't want to become a farmer. It's not that I didn't want to become a farmer because I hate farming. No, I love farming. But I didn't want to become a farmer because of the circumstances that I'm in, which is the case to majority of the people. They are not farmers by choice. They are farmers because of the circumstances. Their only hope is to grow enough food that they can feed their family. And if they are lucky, they can have surplus that they can send their kids to school. So during the time when I couldn't go to school, I started thinking, what can I do in order to continue with my studies? I decided to start going to the library to read books. I just want to keep up with my schoolwork. And during my visit to the library, that's when I came across several books. One of the books that really attracted my attention, it was the book called Using Energy. It had pictures of the windmill on the cover. When I opened inside, they say windmill could pump water and generate electricity. The word pump water attracted my attention. I said, if I can build a windmill to pump water, I will start irrigation, growing food 2 to 3 times a year. I thought that would be a solution to the problem that we're facing. So that's how I decided to build the windmill.
Makes it sound like that's what you would do if you're a 14-year-old kid where you're in the world. Of course, William did that. Nobody believed Tom Riley that it was actually going to work.
Exactly. I mean, when William was started tinkering with all this junk in the junkyard, the villagers, you heard, called him crazy and possessed, and there's no way you can succeed. And that culture was not a, and is not a standout, don't stick out. You know, you just revert to the means. And he stuck out by a mile. And given the village's opposition, that could have been one reason he gave up, or the famine, or the drought, or the floods, or the political violence, or the environmental degradation. And he overcame all of those things despite what the village thought. And this song perfectly encapsulates their views in a not as serious as I just mentioned way.
You met William in 2007, I think. Is that right?
That's correct.
And did you know, so the thing you described, and William, I'm going to ask you because I want to find out why you didn't give up, because I want to know what was going on in your head and your heart. What was your impression of William when you first met him, if you can remember that very first time? Emotionally, what did you feel?
So William came to the conference at the behest of my colleague, Emeka, who read about him on a blog, who I'm now good friends with every single person in the chain of William. And he came to our TED conference in Arusha, Tanzania. And TED allegedly stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. It brings people together to talk about ideas. So I saw this kid standing in the corner looking terrified. And I see myself as a host. So I went over and said, my name's Tom Riley. Who are you? And he said, my name is William Kamkwamba. And I said, I know who you are. And we had basically a very halting 15-minute conversation when I just had a eureka moment. I was like, this kid can make a huge impact in the world. The first 15 minutes. And I'm not joking. I'm not exaggerating. That's exactly
why
what I
Why did
thought.
You think that, Tom?
Because he told me what he did. I had no idea. I mean, I'd read from my friend. I read a little bit. But he explained to me what he did and what the context and the background a little bit. And I said, wow, that is a story. If he could share that story with a lot of people, that would be a really good thing. So then I convinced my boss at TED to put him on the stage. And initially the boss said, no, he doesn't speak English. We didn't have time. This is too last minute, blah, blah, blah. And I was not to be deterred. And when he spoke on the stage, well, I'm not going to tell you what he said because you might want him to say what he said. But let's just say he made a sizable impression. And then after the conference, rather than go home, I went to Malawi.
What did you say on that stage, William?
One thing that I said on that stage, it was I tried and I made it. So I was referring to the making of the windmill. When I had I got some information about windmill, I decided to build it. I went to the junkyard picking up pieces that I needed for my windmill, and I did try. I made it.
This became the leitmotif of the entire conference.
I tried, I made it, I made it.
Everybody was saying that to each other.
But the thing, all this stuff going on around you, yeah, the political stuff, the keep your head below the parapet, the fact you're 14 years old at the time, do you look back now and go, who was that boy? Do you know that boy?
So sometimes I do look back, but I think I'm lucky to have some strong people in my life that inspired me and motivated me, because what I was going through could have simply stopped me from achieving what I achieved at that moment. I think when I started thinking of building the windmill, one other thing when people were saying it won't work, it's not going to happen. Maybe this is just you are going crazy. The one thing that I keep asking myself, what did people think when the Light brothers were thinking of building an airplane, saying that we're going to build a machine that will be flying like a bird? That time, I think people might think they were insane. So in myself, I said, if the windmill exists somewhere else in the world, it meant that a human being like me built it. I can also be able to build the same thing, regardless of what people are saying. Even if I will fail, I'm not going to be the first person to fail. But if I'm not going to do anything with the problem that we are facing right now, nobody else is going to come to solve my problem for me. I still have to go and do something about it.
I think I read somewhere, and you'll tell me if I'm right or not, your grandma said, solve your own problems. Is that right?
That's right. My grandma is also one of very inspirational person in my life. Because in Malawi, there's this division of labor. There's some work, they say it's for men, some for women. Quote unquote, the work that is considered to be for men, it's making bricks if you want to build a house. Of course, it's a tough job. They consider that being can be only done by men. But my grandma started doing it on her own. A lot of people were asking her, why are you doing this instead of your husband? Her response a little inspired me. She said that when your cloth caught on fire, you don't wait for somebody to put it off. You are the one, you first feel the heat. So if you are feeling the heat, you should try to put it off. And somebody far away, they can see that you are struggling. They can come along and help you. So she was referring that if you have a problem, you know your problem better than anyone else. You should always try to come up with a solution and other people might come along and help you. But if you don't do anything, nobody is going to solve your problem for you.
Stay with me for much more from my guests today, William Kwamba and Tom Riley. They're back in a couple of minutes, and I'm sure you've been inspired already because I have. Much more coming up from them very shortly.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss. In partnership with Mishkonda Raya. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can catch this very program again if you pop the words Jazz and Shapers, I know it's complicated, isn't it, into your favourite podcast platform. My guests today are inventor and author William Kwamba and serial entrepreneur Tom Riley, co-founders of Moving Wimbles Project, an NGO empowering young problem solvers in rural Malawi. You were talking earlier, William, and again, I asked you to cast your mind back to being 14. I find listening to you, I mean, and anyone that's seen the movie, anyone that's read the book, and I'm sure people that go and watch the piece of theatre will be very moved. Are you moved, or do you distance yourself from your own life and achievements?
I'm moved. I'm also like moved myself. I think one thing that I'm very excited to have for get my story being told through the musical. I'm excited because my goal was like to share my story with the rest of the world. Maybe people might learn something. Completely people, they have like different like background than my own background. But my hope is that my story might inspire them like to do something in their own communities, regardless of what their circumstances might be. I do feel very proud and excited to receive email from a person that I have never met before. I don't even know. Say that because of your story, I was able to go back to school. I'm graduating right now, getting my engineering degree. Or I started a program in my community because you inspired me to do so. To me, it's very exciting. And seeing now, like, we can be able to share this story with other people in the musical form, to me, it's very, very exciting.
Tom, Williams mentioned the word communities a few times. And when I was thinking about meeting the two of you, I remember something that one of the people I've worked with says, which is, you help your own communities. That's where it starts. Whatever your technical skill is, you help your own communities, your community, the LGBTQI plus community, IA plus community. Make sure I get that right. You founded two businesses in there, multiple businesses actually, but two that I'm aware of, Digital Queers, Planet Out, for example. Mm-hmm. What's it like to do stuff for your community, for you? Is it important?
Well, yeah. I mean, you have there's a responsibility. I came of age when the HIV crisis was starting, so that it happened, like, it started kind of my senior year of high school. And then when I became, you know, a young person leaving school and leaving my parents' home for the first time, I could see what was happening, and I was also terrified. And so I wasn't doing a lot of AIDS service organizations, but I was taking care of my friends who were sick. But out of that came, we're not going to put up with this BS about people not liking us because we're gay, lesbian, et cetera. And my friend Michelangelo Signorelli, who's an author and radio host on Sirius Satellite Radio in America, he inspired me. He's like, go get him. And I was part of a movement called Queer Nation. And that was about reappropriating the word queer and going out in the world and doing stuff like having kiss-ins at the Embarcadero in San Francisco and actions and scrubs. It's very much based on the ACT UP methodology, but about gay rights and stuff. So I was a helper, you know, I was just part of it then. But what I realized is I had the tech background and I had the queer background, and I was like, why don't we like put them together? Because I had friends, a whole community of friends in the tech world, and I went to them and said, like, can you guys come together and help us redo the computer infrastructures of the national queer organizations in America? And they said yes. And it was like stone soup. You know the story of stone soup? Oh, okay. Well, you put a stone.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yes.
Keep adding stuff.
So I was the rock. And then I got everybody to put in software and hardware and computers. And we had a fabulous party when people looked around at the party and said, oh, I thought you were. Or, God, I've always had a crush on him. Or, or, wow, those two are married. I have no idea. But we did create a community. And I my background, over and over, I've tried to create communities of people. And it's the only way you can change anything.
And just on the invention thing, because I'm talking to two of you, serial entrepreneur, inventor, the art, the act of creation for you, the hold on a minute, I've got this idea. I'm going to build a windmill. I'm going to build a community. Did you find in talking to each other that you approach things very similarly or very differently?
It's similarly, the way like the approaching of like doing things. I think afterwards, when you come up with like an idea, you want to build like something, that satisfaction is that that thing that you are working on, like it worked, like it solved like a problem. To me, it's always when that like happened, it's always like very exciting because I put up like my mind to do this. I'm not like looking in terms of what might go wrong, but I'm always what to look like after that thing is being able, like it's done, it's being like achieved.
Like a visualization, basically. Mm-hmm. And for Tom?
I would say that we both share this idea of you can think up an idea that's big enough to turn into something and then pursue it against all odds. In his case, way bigger odds than me. In my case, just had to work really hard. And, you know, everyone's like, your gay online service planned out. That could never work. You'll never get venture capital. You'll never do this. You'll never do that. And I was like, okay. The proof is in the doing it, right? But I think that ability to come up with the idea and then decide you're going to pursue it no matter what is the mark of an entrepreneur. I think of William as very entrepreneurial. And I've been entrepreneurial since I was a kid. And so I have such respect for his, you know, amazing story and his amazing skills that he inspired me so much. And hopefully I did a little bit back. But there's so much that I've learned from William that I never would have known if I hadn't met him.
When you met William, you had a moment that said, hold on a sec, there's something special about this guy. And you just knew.
I did.
You did. And now we're almost 20 years later and you're still talking to each other, which is good.
More than that.
Yes. It's longer than that, but it's much more than that. You're working together. You're doing things together. Talk to me a little bit about the early days and the relationship of officially the mentor of William. And then I want to come to William and flip something.
Well, one of the things that blew me away about William is how he's in control of his own destiny. He has a sense of what he wants to do. And because he knows, I knew I could help him do what he wanted to do, meaning to share his story with the entire world. And there's a lot of people in the world, young or old, who don't have any idea of what they want. So it's easier to help people that you know are important. And my philosophy in life is help the spark plugs. So if I mentor the spark plug, then William's, you know, his story from the book that Brian Mueller and William Campaba wrote and the other expressions, you know, they've reached at least 200 million people. So I feel like that's an incredibly great investment of my time, let alone the fact that he's part of my family now.
How has it changed you, Tom?
Well, people are like, oh my God, you've spent so much energy on William. It's like, I'm always like, do you just not have a brain? I've gotten far more back from William than I've ever given him. And I've learned about humility. I've always had, you know, at least middle class resources. I've never lacked for food or energy. And to me, William's story is an against all odds story of overcoming adversity. but in his case, like really severe adversity, only to triumph in the end. And he somehow gave me the sense of that. And I just knew, like right away, I knew. I became kind of obsessed with the notion of helping him, but I was like, we need to go and talk to your parents before we do anything. And so we did. And I was like, what do you want for William? And they said, we want the best education possible. I was like every other parent in the entire world. And I was able to help a little bit with that. But the thing I like is we became allies with his family before we, you know, whisked him off to do anything, because that would have been wrong.
And from your perspective, William, once you've experienced famine and you see your family suffering and you're a young kid, everything else surely, however hard it was at Dartmouth, however hard the challenges have been since, all the different things that I won't ever know about your life that you've have been challenging for you, surely in the perspective of what is essentially life and death, everything else is easier. Is that true?
Yeah, it's true. I think to me, going through the hunger, it was one of very like difficult. I think I have learned a lot from it. Sometimes you just have to stay positive. Or like the challenges that I'm facing nowadays, I'm telling myself that the challenges, sometimes they're just there to strengthen you, to make you grow in everything that you do. As much as you know, if you want to get from point A to point B, as much as you know where that point B is, you're gonna always gonna get there. Sometimes you have to climb over obstacles, or sometimes you have to go around it. But as much as you know, you're gonna be able like to get there. So,
and that is obviously true. But when it's really you and you're having to do that every time, that must be hard. That's exhausting.
It is very hard, and I think it, like, at some point you might think like maybe I should just give
just
up.
Put my feet up, yeah.
Yeah, like give up. I think.
But what stops you? What stops you giving up, William?
The what stops me giving up? It's like for the unknown. To me, I call it like unknown, because when I'm trying to do something, if I give up now, I'm not gonna know what the outcome that I would have get afterwards. But now, if I give it up, I'm not gonna be able like to know what could have come out of it, because I haven't like tried yet. So I need like to get to the end of it and see if it doesn't actually like work. It's not like I'm gonna be the first person to fail in the world. Like there are people that have failed before, but once you do like that fail, you learn something through it. And next time, if you're gonna try like to do it again or do something else, you're gonna know which route to take. You know, like this route, maybe because of A, B, C, Z, it's not like the light route for me. I should try now like this other route. So it's always motivate me and encourage me to continue trying it out.
He just loves to get to know. That's what it is. I've unearthed it. Finally, that's what it is. One of the big, he just wants to know. Tom.
No, discovery is a huge part of William's story, that he's learning things from, you know, pieces of junk, from trees, from everything. He is so curious and never stopped being curious.
Stay with me for my final chat with my guests there. It's William Konkwamba and Tom Riley. And we've got some Taj Mahal for you too. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
I'm just for a few minutes very lucky because I have Tom and William with me. We've been talking about all sorts of things. And obviously this is around the moving windmills world. And in the moving windmills world, there is, of course, the small matter, William, of the piece of musical theatre. It's just been on the first run at Stratford. You've seen a few. You've had the premiere. What does it feel like to see your life in front of you?
It's very exciting to see it now in the musical. For me, like personally, because it's a story about me. I'm reliving the past that was exciting, the past that was hard, going through the hunger. But overall, I think I'm very happy with the work that the actors have put up, the producers. So to see it actually playing and seeing the response from audience, young people coming like to watch it, I'm very happy.
Strange. Is it not slightly surreal, William? Because, I mean, obviously the movie 6 years ago was a big hit. There's the small thing of the book. I mean, if someone was writing about me, I'd find it like an out-of-body experience. But for you, have you kind of got used to it?
It's not quite getting used to it, but I think at the same time, you see it at some point, it being like, is this little happening? You think like you are dreaming, but I'm just happy because that was the goal to me, was to share the story with the rest of the world, and having this form, telling the story in this form, it's even more like exciting because it's sort of like live people acting like live there, the emotional, much emotional story, seeing what I went through, or building like the windmill, seeing that brings up the memories of me like doing that work, and seeing somebody being able like to imitate that on the stage. It's not like very easy thing, but seeing the work that they're doing, I'm happy.
Do you still feel, or do you feel more pressure now than you have over the years? Does it get bigger, the responsibility you have, or are you more relaxed in your role as the inventor and the kind of the person in the story and the person having impact?
I feel more relaxed. I think what is making me like to feel more relaxed, because I know myself that I can't do everything else by myself, but how do we bring in other people to be able to continue doing like a good work to solve some of the challenges? That's why we are working with a lot of young people with the moving windmills. Right now, wanting to build the innovation center, a space where we're going to be able to invite young people to do some work. Because to me, what I really want to do with my life, it's like, how can I make impact, solving like the problem that people are facing in Malawi, or in the world in general. But I think knowing that I can't do anything by myself, but how do we bring in other young people in order like to be able to achieve such type of goals.
And for you, Tom, here we are bringing you in because you've been involved with William for many, many years. The Moving Windmills Innovation Center, which William mentioned, movingwindmills.org, I believe is the right URL, I hope. Good. Tell me a little bit about the plans that are afoot for the Innovation Center.
Well, first of all, I think it's amazing that over 20 years later, William is saying the same thing, that he wants to use his story to help others. Now, we call that positioning in the marketing business. And he is stuck to his guns. It's pretty remarkable. Let me say one other thing, that the musical, there have been three instantiations in the media of William, right? There's the book that he co-wrote with Brian Mueller, who was at the time a journalist. And if Brian hadn't reported on all these events, I never would have known about them. He's insanely skilled at getting people to share their stories. And then there's the Chiwetel adapting the book into film, and that kind of shows a more exterior view. Mm. But the musical, the genre of musical, lends itself to emotion. Music, dance, it lets you get into people's hearts and to really understand. And to me, you can understand a whole new level of the story. But when I look at the top level, I see a fable, a true fable that is so resilient that it can manifest in all these different media and make the very difference that William's hoping for. So Moving Windmills Project, I would say that William had to do everything by himself at the time. He was totally isolated, no support from the village. And there's a lot of other young people like William in Malawi, girls, boys, all over the place who have super talent, but no access, no opportunity. And the people who are tinkers and innovators and entrepreneurs and big thinkers and stuff, that culture is not supported in the Malawian culture very much. And so when William first started talking about this, I feel like we're basically trying to create a William factory, right? And want to empower young people with all the skills that William would have gotten if he'd had all the right tools and all the right support. so they can go back and help their communities, and those people can help their communities. And the reason why the Moving Windmills Project is going to work is because we're building a community. When the young people come in for, you know, one of our sessions, they'll get really bonded together. They'll go home. We'll be on a network. People will share what they're doing. We'll keep in touch with them, support them. And the whole point is the network is so powerful. In the TED Fellows program, which I founded, the secret sauce of the program is the other fellows. Fellows volunteer to help each other all the time. They start businesses all the time. They help themselves out emotionally all the time. And if you can create that platform that includes the physical campus, but also how do you find them? How do you get them there? How do you teach them? And then how do you take care of them when they leave? That is such a great problem. And the community parts are up my alley, right? So I think there's a dramatic need for this to exist, right? That's a good place to start.
The dramatic need to exist will remain. And I pray that both of you continue to do the things you do, making the impact that you make. Thank you for finding the time to join me today. Just before I let you depart, William, what is your song choice and why have you chosen it? That is your last gift to us.
The song that I chose, it's sung by two Malawian artists, Teresa Pondo and the Precious Damadingo. It's also like a gospel song called the Ndita Enda Naye. It's like when I walked with him. It's inspiring in terms of sometimes before, like, you know, like something, you might think something else. You might find you are trying like to get to fill in the gaps because you don't know. But once you know that, oh, I think I was missing this part. So that's like the song about it. Yeah.
Teresa Fondo with Ndita Yenda Nanu. I hope I said that properly. The song choice of my business shaper today, or rather one of them, William Kamkwamba. No one else is going to solve the problems for me, said William. Creating communities is the only way you can change anything, said Tom. And finally, I tried and I made it. The pivotal point from William about the Moving Windmills Project. Fantastic stuff. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mish Kondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.